Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John-Mark Grodi, here on EWTN. Once again, we have this great privilege to come together to hear a story of faith and conversion. We're joined tonight by Seth and Julianne Burkholder. One is a Catholic revert and the other is a convert from Presbyterianism. And they entered the church, respectively, in 2017, 2018. We're going to hear all about that in a minute, but we're honored to have you guys on the show tonight. Seth is Assistant Superintendent for Operations for Catholic Schools in the Diocese of Columbus. And their written version of their story, which is entitled Get Behind Me, Peter, is available online at chnetwork.org/story. So check that out. But it's great to have you guys with us tonight.
Seth, yep. Julianne, thank you for being here to share your story. You know, have courage to come and retell it.
I often, you know, like to muse at the beginning of these shows or beforehand, just, you know, that telling the story is part of the story.
Yeah.
Right? God, at some point in our journey, as we look back and we reflect on it, we learn from it and to pass it on. That's just the next part of the story. So thank you for being willing to come here and do that.
You bet. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Well, let me step out of the way. And why don't we start with you, Seth. Take us back to the beginning. Where does the story begin?
1982.
All right.
You know, I kind of joke about that because it all starts with my parents, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I came into this world. So it naturally has to flow from them. But grew up in a small town in Northwest Ohio. Population 4,000 people. Not much to do. So, you know, naturally, when you're growing up as a little boy in a small town, you're like, I'm bored. What is there to do? How do I get out of this town? You know, all those worldly things you think about at a young age, you know, this, you know, job, career, how do I get to the big city? So from a very young age, what sparked my interest and really led me for the next 30 years was sports. And so, you know, I grew up playing all sports, soccer and track and basketball. But as my wife will tell you, football was my first love and my only love for a long time. So I really dove into that. And I distinctly remember, you know, being in kindergarten and, you know, we're sitting in these small groups in a classroom. And, you know, kids are talking about, what do I want to be when I grow up? You know, they're starting to pique that interest of what is was a career. You know, some kids are saying, oh, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a nurse. I want to be an astronaut. You know, the sky's the limit, right? For me, even at that age of, you know, 5, 6, I'm like, I want to be a professional football player. I want to play in the NFL. This is what I'm going to do. And so I really spent the first 30 years of my life pursuing this. And, you know, it started off of just like understanding the NFL, what is this? I'm a young kid. I'm like reading all these books. I distinctly remember being at my grandparents' house and, you know, this is a book from like the late 80s and it's got like the first 25 Super Bowls in it. Uh-huh. You know, about 10 pages each of like, you know, what was the first Super Bowl, who played in it, like what was the recap of it? And I remember just going to their house and just reading this again and again and again to the point where I almost had it memorized. Mm-hmm. I remember as a young kid that I could literally tell you every single Super Bowl, when it was played, what the score was, who the MVP was, like just really absorbing all of that history. So much so that like even obscure records, like if I said the name Timmy Smith, like the majority of football people are like, who's Timmy Smith? Well, in the 1988 Super Bowl with the Washington Redskins, he ran for 204 yards, which is still the Super Bowl record today. But no one knows him, you know, so things like that, which as you'll see in later in the show, like this played into the process down the road. So then, you know, I really, you know, spent, you know, playing midget football and getting into junior high. And, you know, at the time, my dad was super into sports too, and I'll talk about him as well. But, you know, when you're getting ready to go into high school football, at any level, any size school, it's very hard to get on the field as a freshman. Just natural. Seniors have spent, they've done their time. It's their time to shine. You got to sit and wait kind of mentality. And so my dad was sitting there thinking like, okay, how do I get you on the field as a freshman? And he was like, well, you know, you played soccer when you were younger. He's like, have you ever thought about kicking a football? And I said, no, but let's do it. Mm-hmm. You know, saw it as a challenge. And said, okay, let's do it. And so, like, you know, we spent so much time together, you know, doing that and practicing that. And sure enough, as a freshman, I got to do that. And I got to play on Friday nights. And that also led to me also playing offense and defense as well as a freshman. And had a very good, you know, high school career. But, you know, when you come from a small town, it's hard to get noticed by colleges. And but I did go in and play college football. Had a pretty solid career there. And then after that, again, knowing what I wanted to do from the age of five, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, this is what we're doing. We're pursuing playing professional football. And so, I mean, there was just, you know, this passion, this driven nature, so much so that I would literally get up at 1, 2, 3 in the morning. I would, because I'm laying in bed and I'm like, I have to get better. This is what I want right. to do. I can't waste any time. And so I would go to the weight room and lift. I'd go out to the football field and run sprints. And, you know, to kind of flash forward then from that time, you know, as I got later in my career, I graduated college, went off, played minor league football, played in the indoor football league, arena football, but ultimately never got over the hump and got into the NFL, which is extremely hard to do. You know, I feel like I made it 99% of the way there, but, you know, there was this thought of like looking back on it that maybe that was a waste of time, you know, that I've spent all this time, all this effort on this one thing. What if I had to spend it on other stuff, right? You know, like living my faith, which obviously we'll get into in the show. But in reflecting deeper on it, those different things along the way about me, those characteristics of who I was and what I put into football are the same characteristics that ultimately led me to seeking God and finding his church and coming home.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, so nominal Catholic, talk a little bit about, you know, where was the faith in your life up to this point?
Yeah. So, as I said at the very beginning, it all starts with parents, right? And so my mom was raised Catholic, grew up at a time, when she went to Catholic school, even back when they had daily mass. My dad was not Catholic. He was Mennonite. So Bluffton, where we grew up, is a Swiss Mennonite community. Even though there's all sorts of churches there, you know, Lutheran, Presbyterian, and so forth. And so the one little Catholic church that we had there in our town, that's where we grew up. And so my dad wasn't anti-Catholic, but he also he didn't even know his own Mennonite faith, right? So there was that element of like religious indifference within our household, but still slanted towards, we're going to raise the kids in the Catholic faith. So my brothers and I were, you know, we were all sacramentalized, baptism, first confession, Holy Communion, confirmation. You know, we checked all the boxes outside the home. But inside the home, if you had come into our house, you would not even have known visibly or verbally that we were Catholics, let alone Christians. You know, there was no crucifix. You know, we didn't read from the Bible. Those things were there, hidden in a box in a closet. You know, we didn't even pray before meals. Like, I've never seen my father pray, lead us in prayer. I mean, even, you know, the most basic prayer, you know, that Catholics say before, you know, they eat food, you know, the Benedict Domine, bless us, O Lord. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't even do that. I didn't learn that until I was an adult.
Right.
So Catholic, but not actually living it. Obedient to the sacraments, obedient to Sunday worship. And I don't say that to, like, knock my parents. Because especially if you look in our culture and our society today, so many people grow up they're unchurched. They don't know who Jesus truly is. They don't know what corporate worship is. And so I don't take it for granted, but it's my job now, our job, to build upon that foundation. And so, you know, I kind of see it as like, I grew up in the church. I was built on a foundation of rock, not the sand that they talk about in the scriptures. It was rock, but it was like crumbled rock because I only knew bits and pieces of it. But that's kind of my religious upbringing. And again, I get back to, but at the end of the day, it was just on the back burner. And my life was all about sports. And then one day I met a girl.
Gotcha. Well, Julianne, talk about your background and then bring us up to meeting.
Okay. Yeah. So I grew up in the same small town in Bluffton, and my sister was in the same class as Seth. Brothers were in the same classes years ahead. So there was some family connection there.
Dads
were in the same class many years before, and even our grandparents knew each other. So go back a long way, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But I'll preface that by saying that I was raised in the Presbyterian faith, and both of my parents were very obedient and taught us as a family and going to worship on Sundays. And my parents are very involved. My mom played piano and the organ and very involved with the music. My dad was too. He's more of the sound technician behind the scenes. But music was very important to our family and our form of worship that we brought and that we contributed growing up. And so we went every Sunday. Mom and Dad went. We did say prayers at home, but there wasn't any formal catechesis, as Catholics would say, as far as, you know, teaching me the basic tenets of what did we believe as Presbyterians. Mm-hmm. It was just, well, this was what my dad grew up with. My mom came into that after they got married, and that was just what our family did. And there wasn't any questions, there wasn't any arguing and thoughts about, you know, defending our faith and mm-hmm. talking about it openly. But there was just this, you know, kind of this blind obedience and this blind faith that I had, that I was always drawn to being a Christian the best way that I knew how, and going to church on Sundays. And that was something that throughout my childhood, and then even in my adulthood, I never strayed away from that. That always was with me. I don't have quite the story as Seth does, as far as my great ambitions to be, you know, a professional athlete. I had other ambitions in many areas of life. So that was something that I think as our paths converged, we got into our mid to late teenage years in high school. That was something that I saw in Seth, and wow, look at him, like. You know, we share that this drive and this kind of this common goal of, like, we, you know, I was an athlete myself, and he was, and so there was that common connection. Mm-hmm. And with our faith being, like, secondary or, you know, kind of on the back burner, that, like, okay, well, I knew he was Catholic and he knew I was Presbyterian. And mm-hmm. But I ended up actually pursuing him initially, and had to kind of convince him in many ways that sports maybe isn't the answer. You know, maybe you should have an interest in something else besides that. Thinking of myself at the time, but we did share that belief in God, and we didn't. As Seth said, we weren't very strong in, you know, defending our faith and knowing either of our faiths. And that was ended up being a good thing, as I think it made our conversion together many, many years later easier, because we didn't have these blinders on from different places. So,
but that religious indifference, though, allowed us to come together. Yeah. You know, when I reflect back on it, I'm like, well, if you were a strong Presbyterian and I was a strong Catholic, we may have never even gone on a date. You know, so there was elements of, like, that was good to bring us together.
God's providence there.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. Well, in both cases, you know, in many stories, you know, this is true for my wife, you know, grew up Catholic or Presbyterian and sort of have all the trappings, have the foundations, you know, kind of have the vibe, the cultural atmosphere, the sacraments. It never quite takes in terms of a personal conversion, but still the roots and the foundations are there. And that's still a great thing. I mean, so many conversions do come about later, you know, building on the roots and seeds that were planted there. So we praise God for that. And, you know, there's always providence in everyone's stories.
Absolutely. I mean, and we talk often about how, like, even though she was raised in Presbyterian, mm-hmm. again, that kind of hindsight looking back, like, wow, those were wasted years. Too bad you weren't Catholic then. But they laid a foundation.
Right.
And it's a good foundation.
Right.
And there's elements of that that led you ultimately home.
Yeah. God uses everything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And so when we were first in our early years, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, I'm never going to become Catholic. I remember saying, I wouldn't say I was anti-Catholic, but I'm like, I love what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, love the Presbyterian faith of what I knew. And so we had to kind of come to an agreement, and mm-hmm. we would trade off. We would take turns. You know, we would go to, you know, Mass some Sundays, or, and then Presbyterian some other Sundays, and many, like Easter and Christmas, those holy days, we would go to both, mm-hmm. because I wanted to go where I wanted to go, and right. and he felt the same way. And so many, we worshiped, you know, a lot together, we traded off, and that worked for a long time.
Right. Yeah.
To do it that way.
And that's correct. I mean, we worshiped. Mm-hmm. Like, we never, like, stopped worshiping God. Yeah. We just didn't live it the other 6 days, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's she talks about, like, going to both services on, like, Easter and Christmas and those kind of high days. I grew up, and even in my small town, we had midnight mass, mm-hmm. which is kind of a lost thing. That's hopefully it's trickling back. Yeah. And we go to midnight mass now all the time. But that was such a profound experience on me as a kid that stuck with me forever, that mm-hmm. even though I didn't know my Catholic faith, just like she said she was never going to become Catholic, I was like, well, I'm never not being Catholic. Yeah. But it's not because I knew it. It's because it was almost like a badge of honor. Like, I'm Catholic. This right. is cool.
Yeah.
Like, I get to go to midnight mass. We have incense.
Yeah.
Like, all those things that, like, those yeah. senses, the yeah. five senses that really draw you into a mass mm-hmm. of the, you know, tasting, touching, feeling, sensing, all those things, like, stayed with me, yeah. even though I didn't understand the dogmas and the doctrines.
Well, in the modern world where, you know, everything sort of waters down and flows together, to have something that's distinct and historical and ancient and mysterious, it does form an identity, you know, and even if it's not there in the head yet, still there's an attraction of the heart, you know, yeah. to something there.
Yeah.
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 All right. So you guys began dating during college, before
high
college?
School.
High school. Okay. And then all the way up through college. And then, you know, through your career, you know, when did you guys actually get married?
Okay. I'll tell this one.
Okay. There's
you
a little story
over.
With that. No, go ahead. Sure.
So when we first started dating, okay. and keep in mind, you know, we're young, we're teenagers, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And again, very laser focused on football and what I want to do with that. I would joke with her and I say, you know, you have to put in 10 years of dating before I'll propose to you, right? It was 11. So we dated for 11 years
wow.
before we finally got engaged in 2012.
Okay.
And that's the year we got married. Which lends into an interesting story of our marriage, which I'll let you start off telling that, and then maybe I'll just interject along the way.
Okay, so yeah. we were both out of college and okay. a couple of years, that when we actually got married, and we were asking the question, where should we get married? Mm-hmm. You know, we were very involved with the Presbyterian
right.
Place in where we lived at the time, and Seth asked the question, well, should we get married in the Catholic Church because I'm Catholic, and went to his mom and said, you know, we weren't even going to mass at all anymore. By that time, we were only going to the Presbyterian.
Okay.
And so we had kind of sought out both paths and ended up deciding to get married in the Presbyterian and without the approval of the bishop, which a Catholic would be required to do if you were seeking a valid marriage as a Catholic.
To get a dispensation.
Yeah. And so Seth had no idea about that. And so we got married, and we were invalidly married for almost 6 years or 5 years.
5 years.
Well, a little over five
yeah,
years.
5 years.
And then we had that validated once we were coming into the church
That's
together
right.
and had to go through a process called a radical ordination to get our marriage, you know, approved and
yeah,
by the bishop.
Right.
So we had to go through some steps to do that later on. But at the time when we were, you know, planning our wedding and getting married, we were doing the best we could. For example, we wanted to have the Ave Maria sung at our wedding. We were not allowed to do that because it was focused on Mary. So the Presbyterian would not allow that. And
now that's interesting because up to this point, I mean, yeah. had you encountered these, theological differences that really made the two stand apart?
Nope.
No.
Still weren't there. It was all kind of experiential.
Sure.
Like
okay.
memories from childhood.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
So he wanted this, and I said, "Yeah, that I love that song. Let's ask." We couldn't do it. Hmm. And Seth.
But we did do a different song.
We did do another Latin song that was permitted to be sung at the wedding. So we kind of we got a compromise there. And then Seth was, I can hand it back over to you on the next part.
Yeah. Wanted Holy Communion, right? Even though it's not the same thing.
Right.
Again, you grow up with that, you know that. That's the source and summit. That's
and
the
as
pinnacle.
Part of your worship growing up, communion was part of the Presbyterian.
Once a month.
Okay.
Once a month they had grape juice and bread.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And there was any sense, did you have a sense of what Presbyterians believed or didn't believe about it? Or was it just part of the scenery?
That it was symbolic.
Okay. Yeah,
that
right.
it was symbolic of the Last Supper.
Gotcha.
And
yeah.
that was about all I could tell you.
Sure. Okay. So why did you want it at the wedding?
Yeah, so.
He did.
Mine was the opposite side.
Yeah.
Like, I at least knew that as Catholics, we believe in the real presence.
Okay.
Even though, like, my best apologetic defense would have been the Last Supper narrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So it's not like I could have told you anything beyond that. And so actually, for the first years of dating and going back and forth, when I would go to a Presbyterian service with her, she'd be like, why aren't you coming up to receive communion? I'm like, because it's just a symbol, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't do it. And I think it was 4 years into our dating at a Christmas Eve service at the Presbyterian, for the first time ever, I went up and received. And so, like, you know, when we talk about, like, our story online, get behind me, Peter, mm-hmm. it's kind of like Peter's threefold denial of Christ. Mm-hmm. For us, for me specifically, that felt like the first denial. Mm-hmm. Like, now I feel like I've really apostatized from the church, you know what I mean? Like, fallen away.
Right.
That was that first key moment, was that reception of
yeah.
grape juice.
And of course, the flip side of this, you know, looking at it from the providential standpoint, is like God's giving these little moments to yes. begin to awaken you and consider, like, yeah, why do we do what we do? Where should we be going? All that
correct.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah. So then in our yeah. marriage, we wanted to do that. And the Presbyterians don't do that.
For weddings now.
For gotcha. Weddings.
Okay.
But we convinced him.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting. It was obviously terrible because it's grave sin. And all my Catholic family members, who, again, were not all well catechized, my extended family, they all came up and received. So I've led all these people into sin. To which I've done numerous penance for since then. But again, looking in God's providence and how that carried out yeah. in the future, that was the moment. And we did it. And what was interesting is they had, you know, what we would call an extraordinary minister mm-hmm. of Holy Communion. Mm-hmm. So they had a guy who we knew well at the Presbyterian, who we hung out with. We were like in a bowling league with him. And so he was the one who came up there and, you know, distributed the elements. We'll get into it when she comes yeah. into the church down the road. But he converted the same year
the
she
same
did.
Time.
Ah, okay.
So and God was not only working through us in yeah. our marriage and our wedding, but obviously him as well.
Right.
Which was fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what year did you guys get married? What was that? When was that?
2012.
2012. That's
yeah,
right.
So about yeah. 12 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's take a little break there. Okay. Again, up to this point, God's giving these little signal graces, these little moments, you know, that I'm sure, you know, foreshadow, you know, what will see next in your story. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes and we'll hear the rest of it. We'll see you in just a couple minutes to finish Seth and Julianne's story. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org/story, you can see a written version of their story, share it with friends and family. That's a powerful way to share these stories. Also, there's a whole archive of stories of people from all different backgrounds that you can explore there as well. So we'll see you in just a couple more minutes for the rest. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Seth and Julianne Burkholder. Seth is a revert to his Catholic faith. Julianne is a former Presbyterian. And we've heard great stories so far. Again, so the providence of the many great foundations and seeds planted in childhood by our family, you know, families raising us in the faith, even though it didn't quite take, you know, there was more to do. Still, great foundations, you know, and God uses those. And you related how, you know, meeting and dating and preparing marriage and even planning the wedding, you know, are some of these little moments God kind of used to bring questions up as to, you know, what are we doing here? Where are we going? What faith, what does faith really look like? And so let's pick it up there. You guys got married in 2012, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So what happened next?
So we got married and yeah. we were, you know, very happy, you know, newlyweds and, you know, going to, you know, worship at the Presbyterian and kind of faith was not really on the forefront of our minds. We were married and we had these, you know, worldly pursuits ahead of us. So Seth was kind of at the end of, you know, pursuing the professional sports path and decided to pursue what he originally majored in college, which related to accounting and finance, okay. which is what he does now. Mm-hmm. So he went to grad school, and I worked and was pursuing my own professional career path as well at the time. So we were kind of on that kind of career trajectory with it. And then I, after he was done with graduate school, I was still working and I did graduate school as well. And so that was our focus. You know, Sunday was still Sunday. And so we were about two years into our marriage, like in 2014. Mm-hmm. And that's when we had moved away for graduate school, came back to Columbus, and we're going back to where we got married. And at that time, the church there and the Presbyterian, you know, denomination on the broader scale was starting to change yeah. and change in some very, what we would say, fundamental aspects of how God created us, mm-hmm. and getting back to those just questions of, okay, we're seeing the church is allowing and permitting and saying these things are okay, and we're the church, the Presbyterian denomination was changing their stance on very key fundamental things
and, which you probably guys took for granted throughout your whole life.
Absolutely,
this is just true. This is just, you know, part of the air we breathe, and correct. Now these big changes are occurring in the church.
Yeah. And we immediately were. We could not be a part of that and having, you know, partaking and supporting something we saw was very wrong. Mm-hmm. And so we then had the question to one another, where do we go? Where do we go from here? We had started going back to Mass every now and again at that time and seeking a local Catholic church, and then what are some other Presbyterian places we could go that are more... that believe more traditional, you know, that we have to say like
that
conservative
haven't
that haven't
yeah.
changed yeah. that hold true to yeah. what we see as fundamental truths
yeah,
of
human
of being.
Nature and yes. sexuality and marriage, all these kinds of things yeah. again that you would have taken for granted,
right.
but up to this point you were never really prompted to think like, how do I know this is true? Where do I go for it?
Correct.
If there's a conflict, how does this get resolved?
You know? Correct. And as much as we're very proactive people with our you know, desires and goals in life, and we've talked about some of those in professional aspirations, we're also human like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And so we're reactive. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we don't do anything until a problem presents itself. And so while it was on one level bad that like, oh no, like now there's this great problem, what do we do? Mm-hmm. That was the opportunity, you know, and you could either just sit there and say, well, we'll agree to disagree. And we'll just stay here and believe what we believe, even though you say you're doing this. Or we can do just that and challenge ourselves like we had always done with other things and say, okay, well, what's the truth?
Right.
You know, where do you go? And, you know, earlier I talked about that, you know, that first denial, like Peter, of the Eucharist. And the second was really our marriage by not getting married in Christ Church. The third was when this happened in 2014 was not just literally turning and running home like the prodigal son. Mm. Like, so that was kind of like my threefold denial. Like, yeah, we kind of played a little bit with the Catholic Church, but we were going to Lutheran, Methodist, other Presbyterian. Like, it's not like I turned and ran home to the Father like I should have.
And what were you discovering as you explored some of these other options?
That we were just going to keep going in circles with pursuing Protestant churches. It's like, well, okay, well, maybe this place right now seems to hold to what they've always believed and taught. But at what point are they going to change? Okay, we'll go to this place. And right now they're, but at any given time, this could change. And then we're left asking ourselves the same question, where do we go and what do we do?
Right.
And so there was a couple years of doing this. And then we, found another, we went to a Mass at a different place in Columbus. And, I think we were just open at that time. Mm-hmm. I think after going through all these different places and seeing, okay, this could change at any time. Like, what is not going to change? Mm-hmm. Where does this even exist? And so we just started going to Mass. And there, I think we just, I especially had an openness at that time to the mm-hmm. Catholic Church of, I'm gonna reach out to the priest and ask, because up to that point, when I'd gone to Mass with Seth again and being just ignorant to everything, what can I do in Mass? How can I participate? Because up to that point, I didn't even kneel. Like, I didn't genuflect. There was like, the only thing I could do was stand and say the Our Father and listen and sit. So I was just very like, that was all that I ever did in Mass. And I finally... Let me just ask, what am I allowed to do? And so over time, after I heard from the priests and understood, okay, I could do these things and participate more, I started over time to do that and kind of come into, mm-hmm. and I think that kind of propelled me to start to ask more questions. And then I saw, okay, there's a chance that they have classes, you know, RCIA at the time, it's now OCIA. Let me just go to this inquiry class and see what maybe this is a path. I don't know. I was just very reluctant. Mm-hmm. And I think even throughout the whole process of just, I'm just not sure, like, how what is God's plan for us, and where should we be, and what is the true church? Yeah. Is there a true church?
Right, yeah. Right.
Important question. Yeah.
And this was 2016.
Okay.
Okay. So this is a good 2 years after we had kind of fully walked away from Presbyterian life. And there was just, as she said, she was just more open at that time to experience those things. And, you know, God bless the priest who reached out and answered her, because it did take him a minute to respond, because, you know, priests are with their emails. And rightfully so. I totally get it. Yeah. I deal with them a lot. But the reason she had that mindset that she couldn't do anything is because that's what she grew up when she would go to Mass with me, you know, from my parents. My mom's like, you're not Catholic. You can't do anything. And my dad would always sit in Mass. That's the thing. My dad wasn't Catholic, but he went to Mass with us every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we were together as a family. So my dad sat in Mass for 40 plus years, but never saying anything, never doing anything, just very passive, mm-hmm. which we can talk about him towards the end. But yeah, that's, but the parish that we found there in Columbus, St. Matthew, very special, you know, like there was definitely the openness of you're ready to receive. I'm tired of going in circles. Maybe we should look at what I just grew up with. But I think it has to do with the fact that they have perpetual adoration. They have a chapel underneath and 24/7, which we've taken part in many, many times. We love it. There's that element of constant prayer within that parish that I think really breeds that sense of holiness and that, you know, it's distinctly different.
Do you encounter that there as part of this process? The Adoration Chapel?
Not early on.
When you got into RCIA, that was part of the RCIA.
But I didn't understand it.
I mean, this is a beautiful thing for parishes to have, because again, I mean, so, you know, for those listening who don't know what it is, you know, Catholics, because we believe that Christ is present, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, in addition to the Mass, there are times and places where the Eucharist is exposed on the altar so that we can come to be with Christ and simply adore and worship and kind of be present to him. And what's special about that is especially, and this is my wife's story, that she grew up, you know, all the Catholic stuff, but it never quite clicked. Oh, yeah, Catholics really believe that this is Jesus, until she saw someone adoring him in the Adoration Chapel. But, oh, wait a minute, we don't just believe that this is a symbol. Catholics believe this is something very, very different, much more. And so that it's a special thing to have that there as a presence in the parish to prompt some of these questions.
Because if not, you're crazy to go into a chapel and kneel for an hour and stare at what appears to be a wafer.
It's either very true or very, very, very false.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Absolutely. So in that process of her being more open and asking the priest questions, naturally, she looks at me and starts asking me questions.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. So now all of a sudden, like as a husband and as someone who's trying to help my wife get to heaven, I'm like, I should probably know more.
Yeah.
So I took it very personally.
Yeah.
And so I went into a deep, deep dive of God. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't enough to just say, well, I'm just going to learn my Catholic faith. I felt like, again, getting back to when I was an athlete and the time that I spent and the driven, the staying up till late at night, all those things, the reading books, I literally started from the beginning and said, okay, listen, God, I've never not believed in you, but show me why I should. Mm-hmm. So you go back and you're reading, like, you know, Aquinas' 5 points for the existence of God and things of that nature. Not that I didn't believe in it, but I wanted to know why.
You're making it your own.
I wanted the reason, mm-hmm. you know, not just the what, but the why. So then from there, I'm like, okay, there's a God.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to worship him. Why are there all these different religions? Not just Christianity, you know, but Judaism, Hinduism, so on and so forth. So I dove into all of those. I've probably, in that short time frame of about 2-3 years, read over 200 books of all different natures, because, again, that's what I did as a kid. I just switched from reading sports books to books about God and religion. Yeah. And so ultimately through that journey, through that studying, that's what really helped me to see the picture.
Now, what were some of the big questions that came up as part of this process from your perspective, Julianne?
I think a lot of things I had never heard. Yeah. So Mary and the saints. I remember distinctly I don't understand Mary, and I'm not entirely opposed to what the church teaches, but I think once I had that openness, and once it was taught and I read, and there were some very good books that I read along the way to kind of help me understand, I'm like, this all makes sense. I get it. Like, God designed the church and like all of this so beautifully. And I've never heard it before. Mm-hmm. And so once I finally heard it and saw it explained, I'm like, yes, this is true. And I agree with this.
For someone coming from a similar background, like how would you describe it now in terms of what you discovered about Mary and the saints that makes sense to you?
How would I describe that?
In terms of what did you discover about Mary? Because obviously we don't worship Mary. Yeah. That's off the table.
Yeah.
But what do we do?
We honor her. I mean, she is the mother of God. God chose her and her, you know, her perfect, you know, she was made perfect, you know, and without sin, that God chose her and to be this special, like, to be such a special vessel to, like, bring God into the world in the flesh. And so how could we not love her and pray with her and ask her for help? Because she's right there with him.
Yeah. Mary and the saints are this beautiful gift that God gives us. Again, they're not a replacement for God. God chooses by his freedom and his mercy, his love, to work through Mary and the saints to give us as gifts to each other, mm-hmm. to be inspire each other, to encourage each other, to intercede for each other. It's a beautiful gift.
Yeah.
So there's just this, as the church has just this wealth of like inexhaustible just beauty and truth that were, there's so many saints and, you know, Mary and the saints are just like two aspects of what the church has for us, that there's just so many things that he's given us to be close to him while we're here on earth to then be with him eternally.
Yeah, right.
We have to, but there's that openness and that we have to have to him in order to let him work through us in that way to draw us closer to him.
Right.
I mean, and the saints are very much like, as you're growing up and you have role models, you know, people that you see in the community, a police officer, a teacher, that you're like, wow, I really want to be like them. A sports person. Mm-hmm. There's some NFL player I really want to be like. It's the same thing, but it's just saints who are leading you towards God instead of some otherworldly thing. Yeah. So I think when you put the saints in light of that, it's easier for someone who just has no knowledge of it to digest it easier. And she's right. You know, she spoke of Mary as a vessel. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the most, one of the most important days of the year is Christmas, right? You know, and God coming in human form through this particular person. It could have been Mary, it could have been any other woman, but it was her. She's probably important.
Yeah.
We should probably do something to honor her, you know, just like we would our own mothers.
Right. Yeah, the belief, you know, Mary and the saints, it's sort of reflective of this larger sort of paradigm of Catholicism, which is the sacramental worldview that God chooses to work through people, specific people and places and things, to impart grace. You know, he works through this person to prophesy, or this person to encourage or to inspire. Talk a little bit about, so God chooses to work through material things to bring us the gift of the sacraments. Talk a little bit about encountering the Eucharist and wrestling with that real paradigm shift. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, when I was going through RCIA and we were going through the sacraments and the Eucharist being so central to the Catholic Church and all that we do, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And I think because I came from a very, like, scientific, like, analytical kind of training and just natural gravitating towards, okay, I need to see this. I need to see some evidence. Like, I've lived by faith my whole life. I've believed in God. I've never doubted that. But I don't get this one thing that you're saying is so central. How does this happen? And so there were a couple things at Thanksgiving in late 2017, before I came in 2018 at the Easter Vigil, Seth had given me a book on Eucharistic miracles.
Yeah.
And that was, it was easy. It, again, like with Mary and the saints, it's like once I saw this laid out in a certain way that I needed to see the Eucharist explained more scientifically, I'm like, I get, yeah. Like there's no other explanation. I had no other issues at that point. I think I was just, am I really going to be Catholic? Okay, this is my last big hurdle, is grasping the Eucharist. So I think I was just, I was like, am I really doing this? Am I kind of abandoning?
I didn't even know she was going to do it.
Yeah, and this whole time I'm just like, and there was this sense of, am I like abandoning, like, you know, I am abandoning and considering what I've done my whole life and what my parents have raised me in. And so there was this element of like that sentiment of, am I rejecting like my parents and all that they had ever, you know, that they had raised me in? And so I think I wrestled with that, and we didn't even tell them until like a week before the Easter Vigil that I was becoming Catholic, because right. I think I just mm-hmm. held on to this kind of what I always had, and that like, is this okay? You know, is this okay to do this? And so I think I held back, and looking back, I would have chose to not hold back and telling my family. Mm-hmm. And they were completely supportive and were there. And I mean, it was great. Yeah. And we can mention them, you know, towards the end, but there was just kind of that emotional, that human part of me that's like, okay, I believe these things, mm-hmm. but how am I going to deal with my family?
Right. Yeah, right.
That I wrestled with.
Yeah, you know, the Eucharist piece is so important because, again, it's one of those pieces here that, again, it's got to be either really true and really important or the opposite. You know, once you start asking the question, like, you know, if there's even a possibility that when Jesus said, you know, I'm giving you my body and blood, and you must, you know, eat and drink my body and blood mm-hmm. to have life within you. Again, if there's a chance that could mean what it sounds like it's saying, then I can't just ignore that. I can't treat that as a non-essential, as something that, you know, give or take. It's got to be really true or really false. Right. And so it does, you know, we start looking into it. Again, for 2,000 years, the fathers of the church, you know, thousands of saints have approached the Eucharist and found Christ there. And there's even, again, as you said, there's even a whole history, dozens and dozens of miracles that the church has taken very seriously and explored and verified. Again, this is not a small issue. This is something that you really have to wrestle with and approach and say, Lord, if this is true, that's what I want.
Yeah. I want to believe, help my unbelief.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You know, and if you'll notice, she told you I gave her that Eucharistic Miracles book on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That at that point, I knew I was coming back to the church.
Okay.
And I'll get into that in a second.
Yeah.
But that was very strategic because, as we know, the word Eucharist means Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So I tried to tie those two together. And you brought up the early church fathers, which growing up, mm-hmm. I had no idea who these guys were.
Right.
But I mean, that was a big part of my conversion and coming back was, again, getting back into like studying the history of the Super Bowls and the NFL, studying the history of Christianity. Yeah. And so going back and reading the early church fathers, specifically St. Ignatius of Antioch, what more do you need from that point on in mm-hmm. some respects? He lays it all out. The Eucharist, as you pointed to, he's talking about the hierarchy of the church, the bishops. It's hard to read that and not say, well, what should it look like today?
Right.
You know? But you brought up sacramental life. Mm-hmm. Okay. We talked about the Eucharist.
Yeah.
We've talked about our marriage.
Yeah.
No issues with baptism. Yeah. We were both baptized as little
Father,
children.
Son, Holy Spirit.
Yeah. So no issues mm-hmm. there. Confession. So again, if I'm going to come back into communion with the church, I have to wrestle with confession. And so I spent a lot of time digging into that, understanding that in scripture in light of the church fathers' practices throughout, you know, the centuries, because, you know, there was the one level of like, well, if this is not real and Christ died for my sins on the cross, well, I'm good. But if not, I have a world of things that I need to own up to and confess and confront in order to move forward. Because if not, I'm just a wounded individual walking in this earth. So when I got to that point through all the study and whatnot, I'm like, okay, this is real. I understand it in scripture. I understand it, how it's been historically practiced. This is what I have to do. I sat down and because I hadn't been to confession since high school.
Right.
So this is a good 15 years of being away. And I probably had 15 pages of paper of all the sins I could think of, which weren't all of them, because years later I thought of more, because that naturally happens. At St. Matthew, I was trying to connect with our priest there, because I'm like, hey, Father, I don't want to show up to a normal confession time. Right. We're going to be in here for an hour. Like, can I schedule a time with you to do this one off? Even though I knew what I was about to tell him and he knew me pretty well, I'm like, do I really want to say this to him? But, you know, it's the sacrament of confession, seal of the confessional. Yeah. And it wasn't working out our schedules. So finally, one what appeared to be random Wednesday morning, they had 7 a.m. Mass. And then afterwards they did confession. And I said, I'm going to go to Mass before work. And I'm just going to sit there and wait and be the last person in the confessional and have, Lord, have mercy on this priest who's about to sit in this confessional for another hour when he didn't realize this is how his Wednesday morning was going to go. And so that's what I did. And that was our parochial vicar was in there, not the head pastor. And after about three sins, he stops me and he says, have you talked to Father so-and-so? You know? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Because, you know, we had things, you know, she talked about the radical sanation of our marriage and whatnot. And so I explained to him where we were at in our journey and how I was coming back. And it was so interesting because, you know, I talked about like my, you know, denial of, you know, Peter and, you know, understanding the papacy was obviously a huge thing in bringing me home as well. The priest in the confessional that day was Father Peter. And so it was like, okay, here I am. I have this threefold denial of Christ, of the church and Peter and the papacy. And just like Jesus did with Peter of, you know, Lord, do you love me? Yes, you know, I love you more. Feed my sheep. Take care of my flock. Feed my sheep. You know, that was kind of like my moment right there. You know, my penance that time was to go to Mass for the next 3 days in a row, but not receive Holy Communion, which is kind of like, oh, hold on a minute. Like, I've just come back. I just gave you a litany of sins, and now you're telling me I can't even receive communion? But again, God's providence and how he works. So that day that I went to confession was December 13th. So the 14th, 15th, and 16th, I went to Mass, did not receive. And then on the 17th, I received for the first time. That's my birthday.
Oh, wow.
So it was like 27 years later, now I'm coming back into full communion with the church on my birthday. And again, I get back to the very beginning of the story of it starts with your parents. So at my birth, and now here's an opportunity at my birth. Flash forward, you know, 4 months down the road, and she finally is saying she's going to come into the church. And, you know, we go through the Easter vigil, and she alluded to that, you know, she didn't tell her parents till like a week before, but being the loving family they are, they all drove down to Columbus and they were all there and sat through the 3 hour
praise
vigil.
God. Praise God. That's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just a tremendous family. And some of them even drove from Michigan, so, you know, to cross the border.
I know.
But, you know, so then, like, we're at home that weekend, and finally my mom had realized, okay, like, I think my son's, like, practicing Catholic again, you know, even though she's not, you know, she's going to Mass every Sunday, but not, you know, devoutly still. And so she was like, hey, here's your box of religious stuff. Which, you know, think about that for a minute. Here's your box of religious stuff. I'm sitting here thinking, well, if that wasn't in a box my whole childhood, maybe this would have been a little different. But, you know, that's fine. So we're sitting there and, you know, little, you know, going through my stuff and, you know, a little glow-in-the-dark rosary that my son now plays with that I probably got at First Communion that I never used because I didn't pray the rosary till I was an adult. But then your sacraments are in there. And I pull out the sheet and it's a sacrament of my first confession. December 13th, 27 years earlier, the exact same date.
Wow.
And I feel like when I came back 27 years later on the exact same date, it's like God was saying, like, here's your real first confession. Like, you're where you're supposed to be. That's that in and of itself. You can throw out all the dogmas, all the doctrine. That experience of God, it was enough to carry me for the rest of my life, that that's all I really need. And the dogmas are important, and I love all of them. But, like, that experience was just so profound and so deep and so relational that now I did feel like the prodigal son, that the Father has welcomed me back in this moment, and he knew I needed something like that,
right,
that specific date. And you brought up the saints. December 13th is the Feast of St. Lucy, who's the patron saint of those who are blind.
Yeah,
and how blind I've been my whole life to the truth.
That's beautiful, Seth. Yeah. We've got about 5 minutes left. So, Julianne, from your perspective, what was it like to then finally go through the Easter Vigil and come into the church?
Just this joy and this kind of sort of relief of, like, I don't have to search anymore.
Right.
Like, I've found the Catholic Church. Okay. This is great. And we, you know, we were in, you know, our marriage was valid and we were expecting our first child at the time. So all these things had fallen into place. And now it's like, okay, now we're in this, like, this new phase of life. And how do we continue this conversion? How do we continue to, you know, we're, as we alluded to, you know, we're driven, we're ambitious individuals and together even more. So how do we continue to grow and continue to seek? And as I mentioned before, the church is inexhaustible. You know, there is just an endless, you know, possibilities and saints and just things to read and just early church fathers and all of these things that, like, we continue to find all these new things, even, you know, having been in the church, you know, six years now, that there's still new things and new ways I'm deepening my conversion, mm-hmm. because it's not just a one time, okay, like I'm graduated from RCIA, right. now I'm right. in, I can yes. celebrate. And there was definitely that, but yeah. now it's just like, now the hard work is really beginning.
Right.
Of now we've been given these truths, we hold to these, we believe these. So now like more is expected of us, mm-hmm. and it's a hard job. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, but it's the work is hard. There's more yeah. hard work putting in now than when I was going through conversion. And that's, yeah. you know, what we're continuing to do together and yeah. to do as a family.
To whom there's a higher call.
Yeah. To whom much is given, much will be expected.
Right.
Yeah.
But then also the grace, there's more grace there, right?
Right.
So, as you were saying, there's so many great treasures of the church in terms of yeah. the sacraments, the devotions, the teaching yeah. to help us, you know, so that when we make the choice, I want to rise to that call that God has given for us to be holy and to raise a holy family, that now I have this whole treasury laid open before me of things to help me on the way.
And I know we only got about a minute or two,
yeah.
but throughout this, we've referenced our parents.
Yeah.
God bless
yeah.
them. And since then, since she's come into the church and I've come back, her mom is converted. Mm-hmm. Both of our dads came in last year at the Easter Vigil together at the same parish. Mm-hmm. My mom is starting to live the faith more. And it's so great now that like we can live this full Catholic life together. Yeah. Especially mm-hmm. she mentioned our kids, which I told them I would mention on the show. I asked him, I said, hey, if I could say one thing about you, what would I say, right? And my five-year-old will tell you he's the only five-year-old bishop. And then my three-year-old will tell you she wants to be a nun. So God has a sense of humor in like what he did with us and now our children. So it's been an incredible blessing for sure.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, and we mentioned the saints earlier and the gift that God gives us in the saints. And we see that carried out, you know, not just in the church triumphant, the saints, but the church militant, us here, that our stories, you know, are gifts to each other, right? It's what a blessing that you're, you know, because of, at least in part because of your conversion and reversion, yeah. that there's ripples of grace in your family. And now you're sharing the story here, and I'm sure it'll touch other people's lives. So thank you for doing it.
We hope so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming to share your story.
Yeah. Thanks.
Appreciate it. We're praying for you as the journey continues. Because like you said, you know, the becoming Catholic is not the end of a journey, but the beginning. You know, the beginning of a journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Seth and Julianne's stories and inspiration and encouragement to you. Again, as we said there at the end, the reminder that we are people on a journey. It's what connects us. That's part of what it means to be Christian, is to recognize that this side of heaven, we remain people on the journey. And so, again, you may not be a convert to the Catholic Church. You may not think that you have some big conversion story, but you do have a story. And part of the journey is looking back and reflecting, what are the good things that God has done in my life? Because he has done good things. But that's part of our journey, is to recognize that. And then to ask the question every day, Lord, what is your will for my life? What is the next step you want me to take? Whether it seems big or small, what's the next step you're calling me to? So let's pray for each other as we continue that journey. I want to remind you, if you go to chnetwork.org, you'll find all kinds of resources there for you, especially if you are someone on a journey to the Catholic Church. If you're asking questions or you're thinking about becoming Catholic, we'd love to be praying with you and for you and helping you on that journey. So go to chnetwork.org and contact us there, or join our online community, get our newsletter. We'd love to help you on your way. Once again, we'll be back next week with another conversion story. In the meantime, God bless.